We're going to take a look back at an opportunity we had with Sarah Mack. This is 7 years ago. And Monique Ellsworth, the new CEO over there at Second Harvest. She'll be with us in the second hour as we talk about the new Second Harvest of the Big Bend. You stay with me. We got a great show lined up for you today.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office. Merrymaids, call Merrymaids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Again, we have the opportunity to gather my friend, and may I say thank you for spending a little bit of time here with me on this occasion. Wherever you may be at the moment, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny is here just for you. Maintaining social distance and all that we are, I'm in one of those moments in my week when I'm sort of looking back then over all that has transpired in the last couple of weeks for us and as a company and as this radio show is trudging onward, and the last couple of months, even the last 6 months or whatever it is now, 5 months, all of us holding hands, so to speak, gloved they are, or maybe just fist bumping our way through our day-to-day activities. You know, trying to get our heads around the impact. And we just, Carl said earlier, we don't know. And it's the unknown that's really driving you nuts. You know, there's so many things, it's like Donald Rumsfeld. It's the known knowns and the known unknowns and the unknown knowns and the unknown unknowns. Or how that goes. I've never really been able to figure that out. But I'm very clear about a lot of things that I do not understand. I know what I don't know. And that's the bulk of my existence. I know what I do know, which pales, but in its impact, I think it's life-sustaining. You know, there are certain critical things that I do know, and I've tested them out. And I turned 65 years old last week. Yes, thank you. Happy birthday to the moose. And in the 65 years or so that have transpired here, you know, there are certain, I suppose, anchors in my life, ways of understanding the world and myself and loved ones and friends and our community as such, this larger family we call Tallahassee. You know, there's certain things that I've come to realize to be trusted. Principles, rules of the road, expectations of self and others, ambitions, visions, dreams, things that you can put your hope in. What do you hope for? What do you fully expect to have happen? I mean, so this notion that somehow we're going to alleviate all of that unknown, well, nobody expects that, I don't think. But there's certainly a kind of pressing, a kind of pushing for eliminating as much risk and as much danger and as much obstacle as possible. And who's to say that's not a good thing? Of course. And yes, as Carl points out, that's why we wear seatbelts. Heck, when I was a kid, I remember riding in my dad's 63 Belvedere Plymouth sedan that had a metal dashboard. Seatbelts weren't even considered. And that thing, and you probably can identify with this, if you are 65 years old or older, right? Yeah. So padded dash, padded steering wheel, yeah, that all came about later after people were permanently damaged or killed. And so it goes, you know, the path of scientific discovery, we'll say, using the word very broadly here, or innovation, is strewn with catastrophes. You know, I grew up in the Seattle area, right? So every year on the anniversary of this occurrence, Galloping Gertie, the bridge that spanned the Narrows down there in the Tacoma area, that got torn apart, and it's always shown as an example of misguided engineering, maybe just ignorance more than anything else. They built this magnificent bridge, and the wind coming through that natural corridor, the Narrows there, I mean, it just created this very odd sort of galloping, undulating pattern where the bridge finally just tore itself apart. Gratefully, thankfully, no one was lost except for the dog that belonged to this one fella out there on the bridge when this all started happening. Jumped out of his car, tried to get his dog. The dog ran the wrong way. And so with that, you know, the dog was lost. Beyond that, the reconstruction of that bridge took into account new information. Well, here we live in a time when that sort of day by day, I think, certainly week by week, discovery of information is germane to our contest here, us battling against the rage of this virus, this plague. And for us all, then, in the midst of that, trying to deal with all four fronts of this war, this battle, you know, because there's the disease itself and its implications, the medical, physical, healthcare crisis that it presents. And we've been battling that now for months. And it will continue to some degree, although gratefully it seems to be declining. While, of course, there are those who are reminding us that there could be a resurgence, but that's ahead. That's not behind us. And what's behind us is the lesser number of new cases and the fewer number of deaths among those known cases. So that's the whole medical front, we'll say. But then there are the three others, right? There's the public relations front, because people are frightened of how they may be perceived if they're being insensitive. If you're not wearing your mask and you're not wearing gloves, if you're not maintaining distance, how are you perceived? And more so, for the sake of everyday existence, how much are you willing to comply with those CDC guidelines? For business owners, that spills over into the third front, which is the litigious aspects. So everybody is worried about liability there. And you're going to see more and more of that coming up among businesses and corporations saying, look, you can come visit with us at our theme park or at our restaurant or our store, but understand that we're not going to bear any liability if you break the rules, or even if you obey the rules. They're looking for as much shelter there as they can. And, there's a line at the door of attorneys that are just waiting to start filing those lawsuits. So there's the medical, there's the, we'll say, the PR side. There's the legal side of it all. And then there's the personal battle, the fear that something else might happen. How is it that I can survive? And we'll call that the personal economy, the personal economics. What will we do? And the government has done what it can to try to dissuade some of that for us. But I'm not certain that can all be taken care of by federal, state, or local. Noteworthy efforts notwithstanding, we're all going to have to rethink how we're going to get through the rest of this together. In my opinion, we will do it together.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We continue on in our quest to bring you all things related to the good that is Tallahassee, this fair city of ours, and wherever you may be this morning, I hope that you are enjoying the day thus far, and our pleasure to be able to be a part of your day. Thank you, my friend, for making it part of a part of your regular routine. If you're a recurring listener, well, you know a lot of these things that I like to remind everybody. I mean, the show is located online, TallahasseeTalks.com. That's important because if you miss an episode, you can go there and we've archived all the shows for you. You can also subscribe by way of that website. You can go there and subscribe to the podcast if you prefer that as a mechanism. Or you can just, pull up your favorite podcast app on your phone and do a search for Tallahassee Talks. There's a number of them out there, of course. Some of you listen to us on TuneIn. I know Rick Oppenheim is a TuneIn guy. Hey, Rick. Good to have you with us. And some of you listen on Radio Ocean. Or no, Radio Garden it's called. Sorry, Radio Garden. And, of course, there's Alexa and all kinds of places you can go to listen to the show on Moose Magnificat. Moose Magnificat is our radio station. And we're simulcast on Saturday mornings, 9 o'clock, bright and early, with 93.3 Real Talk for Tallahassee, John Chopling and company. They do such a great job over there throughout the week, and we're glad to be with them on Saturdays. And as I say, simulcast along with our friends at Moose Magnificat Streaming Radio. It is the one station that provides all local musicians playing their original songs. That's the whole notion behind it. So if you're going to listen to Moose, you can say, Alexa, play Moose Magnificat Radio. I think that's the skill, as it's called. If you're a Alexa user, you know that because it'll tell you right there on the Alexa app what you need to say. Now, if you don't know any of this stuff, we'll go to our Moose Magnificat website. That's easy enough. moosemagnificat.com, and then click on the Listen tab, and it'll have you listening. You can listen there on the website, or you can download one of the apps. We have our own app, and it's free. We don't run any ads in there, that is to say, any pop-up ads. You might hear some radio ads. We do have advertisers on Moose Magnificat, a lot of good ones. And the station is supported both by advertising, commercial advertising, and our listeners. So if you'd like to support Moose Magnificat, you want to help local musicians get their music out there, upwards of last look, we're looking at about 42,000 listeners per week. Remarkable. The growth rate has been phenomenal. Thanks to people like Danny Bedrosian. He's got a show that airs a couple of times a month in our broadcast here. And we broadcast live from Bradfordville Blues Club every Saturday night, 9 o'clock. Isn't that cool? Yeah. Now, these days, of course, the club is closed for safety reasons, but gratefully, we've had a number of musicians step up and perform at the club, you know, masked and quarantined or whatever, you know, following all of the safety procedures. And again, not open to the public. But it's been a great help to the club because a lot of you have donated money. They have a tip jar, they call it, when you go to the Facebook page where the club has its little tip jar, and you can throw in $5 or $10 or $15 or $100, whatever you want to do. And that money is going directly to help support the club, particularly the servers and other staff that are just out of work right now. So that's a good thing, isn't it? And you get to hear some great music. We've had Brett Wellman and his buddy Chris up there, and who else have we had? Frank Jones was on recently. Well, tune in on Saturday night, 9 o'clock, Moose Magnificat. You'll hear Bradfordville Blues Club live, courtesy of our good friends at Jerry Cigars and Jowers Automotive. These folks that stand up and say, hey, yeah, I want to support local radio, support local musicians. Well, they're doing it. So that's all some news for your sake. Also, some other news here regarding some of our friends across the way, City Walk, Urban Mission, encouraging you to help them in support of their work with the homeless community, providing meals for homeless folks. Looks like just in this last month, they've served 3,500 meals, maybe 1,000 groceries. Wow. Things changed for everyone, it reads, including these folks who are living unhoused. When our city shutdown occurred, there were just fewer options for finding food, shelter, hygiene, and it hit hard, and it hit very quickly. Happy to report, they say, that during the time that we have served 3,500 meals and continue to serve 400 per week. It's not part of their normal budget or their program, but God is providing, and as long as God continues to move on our hearts, that is you and I, we can help them by being careful to give to their efforts. They have a partnership with FarmShare, so a lot of that food that comes their way is donated, and they've been able to distribute groceries to over 1,000 people in the last 4 weeks. So 3,500 meals served, and 1,000 people provided groceries, all courtesy of City Walk Urban Mission. Remember them in your giving. They are open. Their thrift store is available for shopping and donating Monday through Saturday, 10 to 6. Up there on North Monroe, 1105 North Monroe Street. Okay. All kinds of good news coming from City Walk. Yay for them, and yay for us. They have one other thing, too, mental health services. It says, we are so excited to announce our new partnership with Bright Future Behavioral Health. And they have now a licensed mental health counseling service there in-house. So if you know of someone suffering from mental illness anxiety disorder, personality disorders, or chemical dependency, Bright Future Behavioral Health is there to help. And they're, again, partnered up with our friends at CityWalk Urban Mission. So isn't that encouraging? Good news, right? We could use a little good news. Here's some further update from Leon County. I'm going to give you this in brief, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit further next week. But they want you to know that their short-term vacation rental plan has been approved by the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation. This is Leon County's short-term vacation rental plan that allows for short-term vacation rental reservations and guests in Leon County. So that's good for the local community. All right. That's all I have time for at the moment. Stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
People trust Sellers for better tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Sellers Flooring Advisor Ryan Fitzgerald.
We understand most people don't come in with great knowledge of what they're looking for or what they need. So at Sellers, what we try to do is use our expertise to guide you through the process.
Get Sellers working for you.
We make it easy, and we have the experts on staff to get you where you need to be, and we give you the options.
On Capital Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive, call 656-8453. Online at SellersTile.com. More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The Saramac Band here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny on a Saturday morning. Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Cerny. Glad you decided to stay with me because I get so lonely when you go away. And so you're back and you're here, and we've got this wonderful band, the Saramac Band. Sarah Mack, how the heck are you?
I'm good.
You're looking good, girl.
Thanks.
You got it going on. And you're a Tallahassean, are you not?
Yes, native Tallahassean.
Golly, there's still those among us who can say that they are born and bred in the good old Tallahassee soil. Are you one of those folks who knew very early in life that you wanted to be an artist, a musician, a singer, songwriter? How did this all come upon you?
You know, that's actually interesting. I think that I probably did know that early in life, but I don't know that it was ever articulated.
Somewhere deep down inside your soul.
Yeah, that is the truth.
You had it.
I was telling a story to Charlie and Claire, who are also in the band. Charlie plays guitar and Claire plays bass. And one night we were traveling home from Asheville, North Carolina, I think. And we had a gig in Asheville one night, and the next morning we had to be in Monticello, Florida. Mm-hmm. So we had to drive all night. And those all-night drives get kind of rough. And Charlie said, Sarah, regale us with a story of your childhood. And I told them a story about, I just remember it so clearly. I was a little girl, and I had a record player with Olivia Newton-John records. And I went down to all of my neighbors and told them that I would be having a concert and that it would cost 10 cents. And they came to my house and watched me lip sync and dance around to Olivia Newton-John
Good
records.
For you.
And when I think about that now, I realize that there was something stirring, even as a little girl.
And it would be great if you could get 10 cents. I mean, oh, man. I have a similar experience.
To Olivia Newton-John records?
Well, no, not entirely. Although we'll not talk about cross-dressing or anything. For the purposes of this show. However, this what looked like a phone booth filled with smoke. So the idea being that I would just appear, right? Although I forgot about the fact that I wouldn't be able to breathe. So all the little kids in the neighborhood who had paid their 10 cents heard this coughing, hacking 10-year-old trying to survive. And that's brought me right to where I am today, still trying to survive. We've got Sarah Mack with us, a delightful individual. You're going to get to hear some more of her music as you stay with us in this show we call Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We're here every Saturday morning, Freedom 93.3 FM, and glad to be part of the home crowd here, as we say. And Sarah Mack, what a lovely person and great music. Who do you look to at that 10-year-old? I mean, obviously, Olivia Newton-John was one of your
of course
inspirational figure. Who else inspired you musically?
Oh, man. You know,
You got a lot of Joplin in you.
I love Joplin. Said that? Yeah.
Janis Joplin.
And it's funny because I don't think I discovered
as opposed to
Janis
Joplin. I'm just saying.
No, I try Scott Joplin. I can't get that going on the piano. I didn't discover Janis Joplin until I was probably a teenager.
Really?
I worked at a record store.
Huh.
A record store in the Governor Square Mall.
Very cool.
For 3 years of high school and 1 year of college. And I turned around almost every paycheck and put it into CDs.
Yeah.
And I discovered Janis Joplin. And that period was the time. There was a time in the 90s they called the feminist rock revival.
Yeah.
Where suddenly all of these female-fronted bands were coming up, like in at the same time as Nirvana and Pearl Jam, and kind of this like man grunge, yelling, screaming thing. There was a lot of woman artists coming up,
yeah.
And so the Indigo Girls and Tori Amos and people who had always been around,
yep.
But I just never really
connected
until then.
We're talking the Sarah Mac Band, and we've got Sarah Mac with us here. Let's take some time and listen to this fine artist, the Sarah Mac Band.
A voodoo doctor south of Eden now. Must have slipped a spell on me. He took a piece of my soul, one that I thought was free. Cause my thinking's kinda twisted now, darker than it was before. I have a different kind of wisdom now. Thoughts that I don't want anymore. And I say, this doesn't feel like me. It's not the way I used to be. Just can't fight. I gotta bring somebody with me. As I spiral down this hole, because the dark is such a lonely thing. Wanted doctor knew that I was out there. Oh, so he drew me in through the door and I say, this doesn't feel like me. It's not the way I used to be.
Anything more Tallahassee than Tasty Pastry Bakery? More fresh, more original, more this is why I love this town, kind of delicious? I don't think so. You know, they've been in business since 1963, working through the night to be ready the next morning with muffins, coffee cakes, bread and pastries, and my personal favorite, fresh-made bagels and Lucky Goat coffee. Yeah, it helps get me out in the morning. And they deliver to the many restaurants, clubs, and coffee shops that serve their bread, muffins, and quiche. Never stuffy, never stale, just tasty pastry good. It's the perfect blend of world-class talent, pure, simple ingredients, and down-home Tallahassee family tradition. Maybe they should call it Tasty Tally Bakery, but then why mess with something that's been working for 55 years? You know, you want something fresh and fantastic? There's a Tasty Pastry just waiting for you in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You want to know more? They're online at tastypastrybakery.com or call them at 893-3752.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Sarah, you have graced us with a number of interesting details about your history as a musician in this particular wonderful group, the Sarah Mac Band. Folks, if you haven't done so, you can go to their website, and this will be easy for you, sarahmacband.com, and that's Sarah with an H, so it's S-A-R-A-H, Mac, M-A-C, band.com. Great lineup of stuff. And you've got another concert date coming up, I guess, in May. Mm-hmm. Do you recall where and when?
Yeah. In May, I think it. Let me look at my calendar.
Sorry about that.
No, no worries. In May 18th, we're going to be back in Tallahassee playing at Johnny Ringo's.
Ah. Well, folks, there you go. So if you miss the train she's on, you'll know where she has gone. She'll be back May 18th at Johnny Ringo's. So there you go, folks. What inspires you to write? Does it happen to you? Or do you come at it and go, man, there's a song in there. I'm going to find it. I mean, what's the process for you?
I think it's a little bit of both. I have a cousin who lives in England who also is a musician. And once he was asking me about how I write songs. Hmm. And every once in a while, you get this glorious burst of inspiration where I feel almost like I'm a conduit of some grand universal something, and like the song gets gifted to me. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I carry a recorder around with me all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I'm in my car at stoplights, if you're next to me and you see me, you think I'm talking to myself. I'm probably saying lyrics or things that have popped into my head. I do a lot of just playing and practicing and things. Mm-hmm. It's something, a little hook sticks in my head and it grows and evolves. And then every once in a while, just when I feel kind of a particularly dry spell and wish that I could be writing more, I'll go back to all those recordings and just start playing through stuff. And and almost like songwriting exercises. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn this into something, and if it's horrible, then I'll trash it and come back again later. But unfortunately, it's much more work and discipline than it is grand inspiration.
It's a job.
Yeah.
It is a job. And you know, it's interesting. My son, Morgan, will say the same thing. You know, and the hardest part, I think, for an artist of any kind, whether it's visual or music, performing art, is to realize that there is no one performance that is grand beyond all measure. You know, so
it would be great if there were.
If it were, but you know, you keep turning it out, and you turn it out, and you turn it out, and you turn it out. You think about those artists who have endured, you know, over time, and we talked about, of course, some of those that have inspired you. Are there guitarists particularly that you look to, maybe an Eric Clapton or somebody that you just go, man, that is just so cool, that have inspired you along the way, do you think?
You know, this is going to be like the cheesy hometown answer, but really playing with Charlie has done a tremendous, I mean, I still don't know that you would even look at me and say, oh yeah, she's definitely inspired by guitarists, because my main instrument really is my voice. I fiddle around a guitar and I fiddle around at piano, but I'm primarily a vocalist. But Charlie has always said, if you play with people that are better than you are, you will get better.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've been in the Saramac band since 2005, but I started playing with Charlie in 2000. So even things that sound kind of goofy to guitar players, like now I know how to play bar chords, and now I can transpose in my head, and things that you know, when you're a girl who plays three chords on a guitar, you learn very quickly.
That is cool. That is very cool. Folks, we have Sarah Mack here with us this morning. So glad you've tuned in. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. And by the way, if you've missed any of our shows, you know that you can go to the website, TallahasseeTalks.com. We have all of them archived for you. And if you'd like to email us, topics@TallahasseeTalks.com. Send us your thoughts about a topic or a guest you'd like us to consider. We're here every Saturday. We know how much you enjoy it because we get emails from you. And our Facebook page, people will post notices there and appreciation of what we've done. And I really do thank you for that. We hope that we can continue to bring you all the good things that are going on around town, like the Sarah Mack Band. They're going to be at Springtime Tallahassee later today, so make sure you've made your way down there, and you can give a shout out to our girl Sarah and say, hey, I heard you on the radio. You were so good. A song that she has brought just especially for me, and I appreciate it so much. Thanks for joining us, folks. Sarah Mack.
Favor, come over my way, incline your head to me, hear what I'm saying. 30 years old and I'm tired of waiting, so sit down and start with the low. It seems like it would be so easy, but we've all felt the weight behind that word. And all my tomorrows might be meant for you. If what I'm requesting is too big of a step, scale down the ask and I'll give you some help. 'Cause I'd rather be hurt than be mad at myself for not catching you as you walk by. The most gripping fear is when you realize that what you've always wanted's within your grasp. a chance when you trade in the dream. You won't like what you get. And all my tomorrows might be meant for you. How will I know if I don't try to give you tomorrow? Oh. It seems like it would be so easy. It's the blood that has kept us alive since the day we were born. If my lips and breath could just make out a greeting, but we've all felt the weight behind that word. And all my tomorrows might be meant for you. All my tomorrows might be meant for you.
The always amazing and ever beloved Sarah Mack here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Hope you've enjoyed that portion of the show. We've got more coming up after the top of the hour, so stay with me.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour of this here fine radio show, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Online, available to you at any time. In our archive, we catalog every broadcast, but if you're like most of us right now, at the very least, you're dealing with a bit of anxiety and uncertainty, of course. Maybe you're having to contend with unpaid bills, and maybe there aren't as many groceries in that pantry or in that refrigerator as otherwise there might be. There is real need going on, and there are a lot of real questions being asked. Local officials are certainly doing their best, to try to help us through the time, including our good friends over there at Leon County Emergency Management. I mentioned the Leon County Short-Term Vacation Rental Plan has been approved. Governor DeSantis' recent executive order and implementation of a full Phase 1 reopening has kind of paved the way for this. The county safety plan was developed utilizing guidance from Department of Business Regulation and Business and Professional Regulation, and, of course, the CDC, the Vacation Rental Management Association, all of these folks coming together to make sure they have this all figured out. So they are approving such things. Leon County's Division of Tourism, cooperating with Leon County Emergency Management, continuing to review the guidelines. Okay, they are going to allow property owners and managers to utilize the hosting of guests. That is, they'll be able to proceed with that. So that's all good for the revenues related to rentals. Every little bit helps in generating more income for the county. The 2020 disaster preparedness sales tax holiday began yesterday, May 29th, goes now through June 4th. Okay, so sales tax then suspended for qualifying items related to disaster preparedness. And that's important because, of course, we are approaching hurricane season here. And recall that our message to you is this. Staying prepared is not a season. It's really an attitude. And that's why TallahasseePrepared.com and the efforts that we make throughout the year are there because we find ourselves becoming a bit complacent, yes. And it's important, of course, that this time around, as we go through the sense of preparedness, we have to include the impact of COVID-19. This virus that has invaded American life. And with that invasion has come then a whole new set of expectations that have altered the protocol. They have added, we have had to add to our list of things to do to stay prepared, those requirements that involve safety. Safety from an invisible attack, you know, a lightning bolt, a thunderstorm, heat and humidity are troublesome enough. But when you're dealing with something of this nature, it's difficult to know how to stay prepared. Well, certainly you want to have resources on hand as best you can without hoarding anything. We're not encouraging that. Part of that preparedness, too, has to do with mental health and just dealing with, and I mentioned earlier, the resources available to us through CityWalk. Well, mental health is also available through 211 Big Bend. That's a 24-hour-a-day phone support work. It's publicly funded and privately. There's donations given to keep 211 Big Bend available 24 hours, and they're there to listen and provide emotional support, even crisis counseling and suicide prevention, information of all kinds that 211 Big Bend provides. So if you're in need of help, you can look to 211 Big Bend for that, or a family member. Global cases of COVID-19 now surpass 5 million, close to 6 million cases. According to the Florida Department of Health, 379 positive cases in Leon County. And that's actually good news. I mean, that's a number that's considerably less than a lot of other places around Florida and certainly a lot of other places around the country. And it puts the occurrence of COVID-19 in a less than 1% status as to its likelihood for the rest of us. That should come as encouragement. You know, and I mentioned it in the first hour when we were talking about how we manage expectations and the concerns we have regarding safety. And I think for all of us, the good in this is that it's brought us up short when it comes to the things that we take for granted. I mean, the things that we make assumptions about. I mean, let me pose this scenario. Let's just have you think with me for a moment. You know, you get in your car, you put on your seatbelt, you've gone about the business of employing and exercising those things that are within your control to make sure that you're in as reasonably a safe situation as you can expect. Pulling out of your driveway, you pull out onto the highway, and at that moment, you and I are making some rather critical assumptions that we don't really think about consciously. At least I don't. Maybe I should. Maybe we all should. And in terms of oncoming traffic, you know, you're on a two-lane highway over here on the east side of the county. And as you pull out onto that highway and you're moving now at 35, let's say 40, 45 miles an hour, an oncoming car, we assume, is going to stay on their side of the road. How is it that you make that assumption? I mean, how is it that you can continue to drive your vehicle except for this one basic fact? We operate by faith. Call it what you will. You want to substitute the word assumption? Okay. Human beings were created with the ability to reason. Likewise, we are created with this ability to believe. Faith and reason are two sides of the same coin. There's just so much that you and I can reasonably arrive at. But when that light turns red, you and I reasonably and by faith believe that everyone else behind us is going to stop. But we have no empirical evidence of that. We have our experience. But I've been at intersections where I've been stopped and I got rear-ended badly more than once in my life as a driver. Has that happened to me? And yet I continue to believe that that's going to not be the case. I'm going to believe in the positive outcome, the more desirable outcome. When that gets challenged, as we are during these days, yeah, it brings to bear the question, what am I willing to believe? And who am I willing to trust? I encourage you to trust the people in your life who have demonstrated for you over and over again that they are trustworthy. Have confidence in the people who you know are doing their best to see to it that your needs are met. Don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on them. Believe for that better outcome. Believe with me that we will be okay together.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Monique Ellsworth is the current chief executive officer at Second Harvest of the Big Bend, the food bank that serves 11 counties. Count them. 11 counties in North Florida. Monique has been actively engaged in Tallahassee's social service community since 2011, passionately working on social issues related to poverty. Most recently, she served as executive director of CESC, C-E-S-C, which is a nonprofit organization. She'll correct me on that. Don't worry. We'll get that straightened out. A nonprofit organization which operates a homeless shelter, two housing programs, one of which was a tiny house complex, and a healthcare and dental clinic, all which provided care for individuals and families experiencing homelessness and economic hardship in Tallahassee. And she is our guest this morning. How are you, Miss Ellsworth?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you, too.
One of those factoids comes down to the 1-to-4 ratio. So for every dollar I put in your hand, you're empowered to go out there and buy $4 worth of food because of the relationships you have established with these large-scale food providers, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's, the purchase power of our organization is huge. So when folks are going out and if you're spending a dollar on food, what I'm able to get in volume with that same dollar is much different.
So in some respects, it feels a bit a sort of counterpoint, doesn't it? Because no one would ever tell anybody, well, don't donate food to this food charity. I mean, that's just not cool. But we should do both, I suppose. I think there's a kind of reward for people when they're, you know, they're putting bags of groceries into that collection box.
Sure.
Don't you think?
Yeah, far more tangible. Personal? You get to you're staring at that can of fruit or can of meat and soups, and you can imagine because you've opened those, and you can imagine the other hands that will hold it that need it, and that speaks to a lot of our donors and other donors. They've recognized the link that a single dollar can go in the organization, and the way that they want to give is through cash contribution also.
And you know, the that's a great point. The other part of that for me is the publicity, we'll say, or just the public view. When you've got Gloria out there with her truck, you know, fill a truck. So there in and of itself, that's a PR campaign on wheels. And that it tends to encourage everybody else then. So the food donations that are gathered themselves are indeed valuable. But then there's that second wave. It's that sort of intangible that says we need to keep this topic in our view, don't we?
Right. Absolutely.
Is that the biggest challenge for you? Is in terms of your role, you know, you're the chief cook and bottle washer, you'd say. so your role as a fundraiser is got to be preeminent, right?
Absolutely. And educating.
Educating.
Central to our mission is educating our community on the issues related to poverty and the various systems that have broken down that have led to food insecurity in our community.
And what are you doing as an organization, we'll say, here this month, next month, and going forward? What happens to make people more aware? What do you commit yourself to do?
Well, things like this, even. This is a great opportunity, but really when you get such a huge volume of listeners that get the chance where I have the opportunity to speak about what's happened historically, what's happening today, our dreams for the future, doing this at lunch and learns, getting to do presentations across the community, radio shows, this is an enormous gift for our organization.
So some of that is rather granular, isn't it? It's kind of down in the trenches, one-on-one sort of things, or small groups. And then there's the large-scale efforts, and that's where I will play to the home team here, the Tallahassee Food Challenge, which we have authored and then operated over the last 11 years. The mission there is informational and motivational. We want people to give generously and often, right? So our little slogan is, hunger never takes a holiday.
Right. So true.
There's never a timeout. We get through, let's say, the holidays in the end of the year. We come into the spring, and what are we thinking about? Oh, you know, paying taxes maybe, and baseball or whatever spring, or vacations. And we're just hanging in there for spring break. Meanwhile, the schools are at the other half of their year. And as school lunches and school breakfasts become unavailable and donations tend to sag a bit, then the crisis begins to grow. And I've had people in your job, various food charities, tell me, man, the need is critical. This time of year, we find ourselves really faced with some food shortages, trying to make that happen. Speak to that.
Well, to be honest, so coming on and being fairly new to food insecurity and working on food-related issues and hunger in Tallahassee, that has been one of the most profound things that I've learned is the impact on children. And the breaks in school and the lack of food available to the kids in our community. 23,000 children across the 11 counties that we serve do not know where they and may not get dinner tonight, but 10,000 of those children are here in Leon County. And the we are so close. I mean, we are so close to 10,000 children that the action of Second Harvest and through third-party connections like with you and opportunities to raise not only money and drive food donations, but awareness about that information could be profoundly impactful on 10,000 children here in Tallahassee.
Right now, yeah.
But I hadn't understood that on spring break, that's five school days where parents are likely working and children are at home without food. And that on long weekends, those are days when children are without food. And across an entire summer break, children likely do not have accessible and healthy food readily available regularly in their homes. And those that's that those are disturbing facts to begin learning. But you know what? There's nothing more than a than understanding the needs of a child to motivate me as a new CEO here, but also to like want to go out and begin beating that drum and educating and inviting people to participate in the solution.
I'm really excited about it. She is the CEO for Second Harvest of the Big Bend, Monique Ellsworth, our guest this morning. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Monique Ellsworth. CESC, I tried to pronounce that earlier, is what?
It is connecting everyone with second chances. It's a phenomenal nonprofit in our community that I had the privilege of being with for 8 years.
Wow. Connecting
everyone with second chances.
With second chances. CESC. Well, that's remarkable. We're going to have to dig in on that one. Maybe we'll have you back on another occasion. You can further educate me on my lack of knowledge here. Then again, you graduated from Florida State, got her master's in social work here a few years ago, 2012, is that?
Mm-hmm.
When you were in school, when you were getting your graduate education, I should say, social work, what did the next 5 to 10 years look like then? What did you imagine yourself doing?
Well, what I first had to do was calm my dad down. Because he was not excited about me becoming a social worker.
Dads are like that.
So
sometimes.
Yeah. So my narrative was, "Don't worry, Dad. I'll make money. I'm going to go to work for the VA." and the easiest way to get into the VA was to intern with them. And the easiest way to intern with the VA and the clinic that our school at the time had the relationship with was a VA up in Atlanta, and that's where I had my eyes set. Is I'm going to go to Atlanta for my second internship. Complete my internship with the VA up there, and they'll offer me a job. And that, by God, that was where I was headed. And so I spoke to leadership at the school at the time, and I was like, how do I get there? And they said, you need to do the most competitive first placement in your first internship. I said, sure, let's have it. Where do I need to go? And they said, you need to do your first internship with the Appalachian Center, the mental health facility here in our community. And that's where I did my first internship.
Wow.
But I was placed in the unit. I'd wanted to do the forensic unit. I'd had some volunteer experience with both mental health and criminology kind of in my past when I lived in Gainesville. And so I wanted to be in the forensic unit, but as fate had it, there were different plans in place for me, and I was placed on the PATH unit. So that was for individuals that had no health insurance. And that was my first, one of my first real brushes with the lack of resources available, public resources available to somebody who is under-resourced. And really, it was that internship at the Appalachian Center that changed the course of my life. It was seeing the same client re-enter the revolving door of a local health facility for people who needed resources desperately. And poverty was something that was contributing to that need or not alleviating that need as quickly as other clients might have been alleviated of issues. So when I completed it, I spoke to my field advisor at the time, and I told her, I was like, I'm angry. Like, I wish there was more. I want to be able to do more. How can I make an impact? How can I be a part of that, the action needed to help people who are under-resourced? And she's like, you know, if you want to do advocacy work, if you want to work in homelessness or in poverty, try the Renaissance Community Center, which was a small nonprofit, shared a backyard with the old shelter on Virginia Street. Unfortunately, we faced the Renaissance Center, which is where you might go and pay your light bill. So we had a lot of very confused people walking into our building wanting to pay their light bill. But we were a venue of social services there to meet the needs of the homeless population. And that was kind of where I started.
Incredible. So we got to feed them and we got to house them. But how do you lift them up out of a state of relative mental illness? How do you lift them up out of this system that doesn't know how to get them out of that treadmill? It just knows how to process them.
Yeah, I think it's really complex. As a community, what is encouraging is that I feel like I've been given the opportunity to kind of witness a transformation of social services and the way that collaboration has really guided the way our community has responded to individuals with needs. I think things like the Renaissance Community Center and like the Kearney Center, as it was developed, inviting agencies to come and participate collaboratively to address in a more holistic manner the needs of a single individual. Other organizations that have created this one-stop shop model where they recognize that the single resource provided by one social service agency needs to be coupled with a multitude of other agencies to address usually very complex issues within a single individual. And that conversation, I think, has developed among leaders in our community, recognizing that there is no a single way to fix the problem of poverty, the problem of homelessness. It has to be a number of people sitting at the same table discussing unique approaches to address such a complex problem.
And you're talking about, for the most part, I think, you're talking about, we'll say, private organizations, nonprofit organizations devoted to these activities, right?
Yeah, and learning ways to partner together.
With public resources as well.
Public resources and within the nonprofit sector. And I think that there's a division sometimes within like the concerns of turf. Yeah. If I invite this organization to come and have access to the clients that I'm working with, what could that mean to the number of people that I serve? It's almost like a scarcity model versus that abundance model.
Right.
And are we stronger when we're together? It's kind of like this idea that you go faster alone.
But
farther together.
That's kind of where I was leading with that thought. So when it comes to poverty, for example, and you talk to Tim Center, you know, and he represents an organization that is the outgrowth of the war on poverty, LBJ's legislation, right? Tim looked at me and said, well, we've lost the war. Well, how is that possible with the kind of time and resource given the people to this enterprise? I mean, wouldn't you just say, hey, guys, you know what? This isn't working. If you were a private business, you'd say, we're out of business. Right?
Well, and I have a lot of respect for Tim. Tim does an amazing job in our community. Community action is vital to so many families
Indeed.
In need. I think that we... I think that our measurement of the need, I think that the understanding the depth of the need in our community and where do we look to solve issues and how do we laser focus our attention, that's something I think that we're getting better at.
Okay. So we're getting down to some of the root causes
I think what we're doing is we've broadened the – so, for example, in all of my work up until leading being here at Second Harvest, I have looked at laser-focused homelessness, like the most extreme end of poverty. And so my understanding and my knowledge has been on the most extreme portion of a much larger issue. And so one of the things that I've really come to understand and realize in my transition and then also looking at a lot of recent data and work that's been done to explore poverty in Leon County has opened my eyes to how broad this issue is. So the United Way, we're lucky enough to be a partner with them here at Second Harvest. They, the nationwide organization, I think they picked like 17 states to do a study on. And it's called the ALICE report that they're able to do. Right. So 17 states benefit from an ALICE report. And ALICE is an acronym. It's Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. So working poor.
Yeah.
And the reason they thought that this study was going to be important was because the poverty line is a number drawn in the sand by the federal government, and here in the 48 states, it is a certain amount. And if you make above, then you're deemed to be all right. And if you make below, then you have assistance of, on some level.
Yeah. Which betrays the realities.
Which is where ALICE comes in.
Yeah.
And so what ALICE is doing is it is giving communities an opportunity to understand, although someone might be above the poverty line, they're not thriving. These families are still struggling.
Yep.
They're just barely surviving. Mm-hmm. And so what our ALICE report was able to tell us and what I'm learning and understanding through food issues and access issues is that in Leon County, 43% of the households are making difficult decisions every month. Do I pay my light bill or do I buy food for my family?
Mm-hmm.
Do I pay my rent or do I buy food for my family? Do I fill this prescription or do I put food in my child's stomach? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that's 43%. And I believe last year, that was 2017. I think in 2018, it jumped up to 45. So the number of working families in our community that are making these difficult choices is on the rise. And I don't think that that is something we would have known had our ALICE report not been something that has been, in my opinion, a gift for our state.
In any diagnosis, it requires expert analysis, examination, right? So folks, if you're sitting back right now like I am and kind of taking a breath and thinking 45% of this population, this city of ours, struggling to make those kinds of heart-wrenching decisions, be not dismayed. We are really just getting started, I think, as a community. And certainly in this conversation, we're just getting started getting to know this remarkable soul, Monique Ellsworth. She's the CEO for Second Harvest at the Big Bend. And you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
People trust Sellers for better tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Sellers Flooring Advisor Ryan Fitzgerald.
We understand most people don't come in with great knowledge of what they're looking for or what they need. So at Sellers, what we try to do is use our expertise to guide you through the process.
Get Sellers working for you.
We make it easy, and we have the experts on staff to get you where you need to be, and we give you the options.
On Capital Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive, call 656-8453. Online at SellersTile.com.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
If you've just joined us, I'm glad because Monique Ellsworth is here to tell you a little bit more about Second Harvest of the Big Bend, its mission, great history with us as a community, and a mission that has sort of evolved, hasn't it? I mean, and I hope that we have made this point in this conversation, and we certainly will continue to try to do so, that when we look at hunger, we're looking at the tip of an iceberg sort of thing, right? We're just looking at one demonstration of, or maybe expression of, or outgrowth from what are, as you've said, a very complex set of conditions.
Right.
Including mental health, right?
Yeah. So I believe that, and I'm encouraged that there's a conversation among food banks that Hunger and food insecurity is nothing more than a symptom of an under-resourced house. Mm. And although putting food on the table and making sure that people have adequate access to mm-hmm. an adequate amount of food to maintain needed nourishment, mm-hmm. there are large issues at play that need to be looked at, examined, and addressed as well.
Well, that seems to grow from your baptism at Appalachian Mental Health, in as much as you came through that whole internship experience, and as you came through, you know, came out the other side, you went, okay, treatment is one thing, solving problems is something else. Right?
Yeah, and the continued, what's really beautiful is the continued partnership with Appalachian and my continued involvement with Dr. Jay Reeves over mm-hmm, there. Mm-hmm. Involvement, having his team on site helping people every single day, Monday through mm-hmm. Friday, while I was with the Kearney Center mm-hmm. was incredible. He and I are now working on ways to develop a food pantry and food program for everybody that's right. receiving services at yeah. Appalachia to leave with food. Wow. It's really beautiful to see how, cool. again, that collaborative nature, the collaborative right. effort is really developing in our community.
A big focus, of course, for you as an organization, Second Harvest, kids, right?
Absolutely.
Kids that are the victims, ultimately, more so than anybody else.
Children are the innocent ones. And without adequate resources given to families so that they can support their children, we are dooming a generation. I'm excited, and I've learned a lot from Second Harvest in ways that the food bank has evolved in its ways to address and serve families and children in our community. In fact, 32% of all food that leaves our organization goes directly to children. So we have three programs. One is our backpack program, and we have a lot of community support helping to pack these backpacks. And what we've been able to do is get invited into schools. Teachers recognize, and actually teachers are going to know the difference. Monday morning, children file into a classroom, and teachers know the child that has not eaten since their free or reduced lunch that past Friday.
How do they know that? Just from observation?
Yeah, just the behavioral indicators, yeah. Attention span, yeah. children sleeping in class, yeah. Poverty naps.
You can see it.
And yeah, so the performance of a child on Monday morning is an indicator of what type of resource was available for that wow. child across the weekend. So what we've been able to do is take the recommendation and the reporting of teachers on children that need backpacks packed for them. And we were able to pack bags of food discreetly into backpacks of children on Friday afternoon before they board the bus. But like, there's a couple different scenarios. That child, they get the backpack full of their food. They're going to go sit on the bus, head home. And it is not uncommon for us to hear that child eats all of the food on the way home because they are that hungry. Mm. They're also young. Like, these are growing kiddos. Mm. So they're just devouring the food before they get home. Or they arrive at home, but because maybe there are so many other children in the household, or there's fear that they're going to have to share, that they hide the food in their yard. And on the weekend, as they can, they sneak out to some bush where they have like hidden their food so that they can eat. And maybe more concerning for me is the child, the six-year-old that walks into the house and hands over a bag of food with pride to their parent, that they're able to contribute to the resource shortage in their household. And what a burden for a six, seven, and eight-year-old child to hold.
Wow. We have had for a number of years with this food challenge promotion we do the opportunity to talk to business people, because we're always asking, would you like to help? Can you contribute your advertising dollars, your portion of your marketing budget, so that we can spread the word, right? I can tell you more often than not, business owners saying, I'm not sure I really buy into all that. I don't know if I believe that there's 43% of the population suffering in this way. So I always thought it would be great if somehow we could foster a ride along. You know, come ride with me, and we'll bring the video crew, and we'll just drive those neighborhoods and let you see firsthand the kid that's hiding the food in the bushes in his backyard. Maybe then this invisible in plain sight sort of phenomenon will begin to erode.
You know, and to to be honest, there are ways that like I really, I had this belief about myself that I was aware, I was in tune, I understood the depth, the breadth of poverty and issues in our community. I participated in the Prosperity for All 32304 project that Commissioner Proctor's put together. Right. One of the, it was either the first or the second summit, we were put on a bus and driven through Frenchtown. And Antoine Wright, the executive director of Habitat for Humanity, stood up and he talked about the work that they've done on three houses in Frenchtown. And he said, when we arrived, these three houses, and we were passing by him and in general waves, he was saying, they're right here. They still had outhouses and did not have indoor plumbing. And it was 2019. And there are people in our community that do not have indoor plumbing. That like hurts my brain to think about.
It does.
I'm teaching a class right now at FSU, Homelessness in America. And I asked a couple questions for like an introductory get to know your students kind of questions at our first class. And one of them was, do you know someone who's ever experienced homelessness? And several students were talking about fellow classmates. They were like, I have three friends and they live in their cars. And so I think that the volume of student food insecurity and homelessness is something that's underreported and not, I don't want to say it's not acknowledged, because I think there's immense interest in the university system also to understand that. But I can tell you that one of my, one effort that I will put as much behind as I can is deeper partnerships with our universities, our local universities and colleges, to try and support them as they help students that are trying to get an education and have food insecurities themselves.
And that can happen among people who you would not find below poverty level by any means. And I know that there's some effort being volleyed in that direction locally. And we're hoping to contribute there as well in bringing that to everybody's attention. Well, my friend, we've come to the end of this moment, and I have to say again, thank you for sharing your heart and your mind and your passion. There's a lot to be done. We've decided to join up with you, and I encourage everybody listening to participate. Tallahassee Food Challenge is an easy way to do it. Or if you want to go to Second Harvest, it's fightinghunger.org. And simple enough, Second Harvest of the Big Bend, our friend Monique Ellsworth over there at the helm. We'll have you back when it's convenient for you to be with us again.
Thank you so much. This was great.
A pleasure having you with us. Folks, that's what we do here. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny is the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you on Moose Magnificat Radio every week, moosemagnificat.com, Tallahassee's radio to the world, bringing you all local musicians playing their original songs. That is the sound of Tallahassee. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.